Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a discussion of progressive issues of faith and action, coming to you in the 75th anniversary year of WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, and at WESUFM.org, and repeated on UConn's WHUS 91.7 FM stores and WHUS.org, UConn's radio for the people. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, with spring finally upon us, we discern three ways the patriarchy that is the Catholic Church can be seen to be sprouting buds of hope for Catholic women. Our guest for the hour is Deb Rose Milovec, Executive Director of Future Church, one of a number of organizations that, in this new atmosphere of open discussion that Pope Francis has created, are advocating for women. True, a female priesthood is still off the table as far as the Vatican is concerned, but other just as important advances are possible when it comes to women's assuming leadership roles. Deb brings back reports from having taken part in two landmark meetings, one at the Vatican, believe it or not, and the other in Ireland. And she also unpacks Pope Francis's seismic recent decision to give the nuns a break. And as I'm sure I don't have to tell you, this is information that you're unlikely to get from mainstream media and certainly not from the pulpit. If you value it, please support it with a donation to WESU during this, our spring pledge drive. It's one of only two times a year we come to you for support. Please go to WESUFM.org to donate. And if the Spirit moves you, mention Reasonably Catholic. Thanks. Back in a moment with Deb Rose Milovec.
I'm Barbara Pavarnik, and Reasonably Catholic has been part of an ongoing celebration of developing a mature Christian conscience, and that really has been extraordinary through the example and the voice of so many of the participants and speakers on the show. One of the things that Reasonably Catholic does is offers a deeper and more intimate appreciation of the inclusiveness of the Catholic viewpoint. So many Catholic voices have been silenced or marginalized, and Reasonably Catholic really answers that challenge. I think it's a voice in the church in Connecticut, the church at large in the world. So continue to support this amazing show. If you go online, WESUFM.org, we thank you so much for everything that you will do, and we ask God's blessings on your work, your faith, your relationships, and most of all, with your journey with God. Gonna keep on trying till I
reach my highest ground. Welcome, Deb Rose Milovec.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, it's springtime, and it seems only appropriate that for once in our Catholic lives, we have happy news.
I think it's true. I think it's true.
Well, where shall we start? Chronologically, maybe with that wonderful meeting within the Vatican walls.
Sure.
Why don't you tell the listeners what happened there and why it's significant?
Yeah. So on March 8th this year, International Women's Day, Voices of Faith, which is an initiative of the Guts Foundation in Liechtenstein, and Chantal Guts especially, has been leading this effort to bring more attention to women who are leading in the Catholic Church and the issue of the need for more women in decision making and leadership within the Catholic Church. So it's a way to highlight women who are already doing this great work out in the world, and also to bring attention to the fact that we need to bring that wisdom and talent and intellect inside the church in a much more expanded way.
So. Maybe you can tell us about Guts. How do you spell it?
It's G-O-E-T-Z. Guts Foundation.
Okay.
And the Guts Foundation, I don't know everything about the Guts Foundation. I mean, it's easy enough to kind of look them up. But I do know that I have worked with Chantal in the past before I came to Future Church, working in a women and gender studies online college called Catherine college. And so she's been very, very instrumental in promoting women's leadership, education for women, the work in the field where working with women to help them obtain skills and education in order to better their lives. And especially she's doing this work in developing regions. And, in India may be one of the places where she's doing maybe most of it. But, you'd have to actually talk to her about where all the work is going on. I mean, I know her from the work I was doing with the online college, and then in relationship to my work here, she had begun an initiative last year called the Voices of Faith event, where she brought women from all over the world who are doing this really tough and amazing work, working with victims of, human trafficking, working in refugee camps. For instance, this year we had a woman who's one of the things they do is work in refugee camps, bringing online education to women there so that they can better themselves and get out of the camps and so forth. And so, just people who are doing amazing work. And we talked about this idea of also working within the church, which has been also an interest of, expanding women's leadership. And so one of the ideas that came about was that we would talk about this amazing policy of the Catholic Church of India, which is the gender policy. One woman who helped fashion that document was Astrid Lobo Gajiwala. And so she was invited to this year's event to talk about the gender policy and how it might be a model for the entire Catholic Church. The bishops of India are very prophetic in bringing this forward, and we wanted to share that information with the wider church, including the Vatican, and to say this is possibly one roadmap, one model that could work for the entire Catholic Church, looking at our own leadership structure, our own organizational structure, and seeing how we could develop a plan for bringing more women into leadership.
Wow.
Yeah. I think so, too. I think there's a lot of wow out there.
You're listening to an interview with Future Church Executive Director Deb Rose Milovic on recent good news for Catholic women. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters, and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS 91.7 FM Stores, UConn's radio for the people. What is remarkable about the bishops in India?
Yeah. So in 2008, in some ways, the bishops of India are really leaders, prophetic leaders in the Catholic Church when it comes to the roles of women. First of all, I think to some degree, their large concern has to do with how women are treated in their own society, which in some ways, there's a need for a lot of work there. The whole issue of the girl child, infanticide, female infanticide, feticide. People who are killing their babies before they're born because they find out they're girls, and it's actually really tilting their whole male-female ratio in a very negative way. And so there's lots of problems, if you will, in the whole dowry system that's built around, really penalizes you for having a girl and so forth. So given what women are going through in society, they're very out front about, what the church can do in order to lead in a society of, for more justice for women, more equality, more rights for women, and so forth.
It seems like an unusual place to start to look for relief for women.
Yeah, it's an unusual place, but actually they're very prophetic. I mean, this is sort of, in a lot of places, it is nothing unusual to hear a talk about a homily on women's equality in the church. I think in this way they understand the problem. They also, and what's kind of amazing about it is they also understand that the church is part of the problem in
right.
the sense that there's not justice for women within the church. And so part of the document talks about true equality for women. Not, they don't go into this sort of complementarity language that is used often in the church to sort of, reassert traditional
yes.
roles for women and men.
Women have their special place.
That's
and
right.
It's
women
equal.
Have their special. Yeah, they
yeah.
don't do that in this document. And the reason they didn't do it is because they actually let a few women actually pen the document, and they made some changes and modifications, and then they kind of owned it. But they let women, in a sense, which is a beautiful model in and of itself, define for themselves what was important in the church. And so the document is remarkable. It talks about real equality between women and men. It doesn't qualify it with ideas of complementarity or women are mothers, therefore these are their roles, or men are leaders, therefore these are their roles. They don't do any of that in this document. So it's
without
amazing.
Having read the document, I'm guessing it stops short of saying women should be priests.
No, it doesn't. They and as you might expect, they don't. They talk about women's equality, but they don't actually sort of go up against the current restrictions in the church, which I think, in a sense, would sink the document before it even got a start.
Mm-hmm.
So what's radical about it? In a way that's, that leaves out any sort of frontal, confrontation with church authorities and the magisterium. But it's still remarkable in that, even today, if you just look at many of the conferences that go on, I mean, there's so much talk about complementarity and so women are equal in dignity, but, and they don't do the but.
Mm-hmm.
They say women are equal in dignity, they are equal to men, and we should have a church of co-equals. And so that language alone is an idea that needs to rise to the surface more prominently in the church. And for that reason, it's a really good document. And they talk about bringing women into leadership at the local level and wherever they could actually accomplish that in India. They don't talk about it in the Vatican, but in that sense, it's a good model for the Vatican, because you could actually take this to the dicasteries, look at the way the situation is currently organized, and say, in 3 years we should have X number of women, in 5 years in high levels, not at the lower levels, but in high decision making levels, there's no reason we shouldn't have more women in decision making. It doesn't require ordination for many of these positions. So in a sense, we let that argument on the side for now and just say, just do what you can. Bring women in every place you can. And in that sense, it breaks down those barriers. It breaks down these old ideas, I think, and helps move all the conversation forward about women in leadership, women in ministry, and so forth. So
just getting to what happened at the Vatican, this Indian document was on the agenda, I'm guessing, a discussion of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that the discussion happened within the Vatican walls is itself remarkable.
Yeah. So what we did was we put together a panel of women. So we had Gudrun Saylor, who works for Radio Vatican Germany. We had Ulla Gudmundsson, who was the former ambassador to Sweden, or to the Holy See from Sweden. And then we had Astrid Lobo Gajiwala, who was from India and had worked on this gender policy and many other things in the church. She's really one of the prominent women leaders in India. And Tina Beatty, who is a professor from Roehampton, a university in the UK, who's long written about many of these issues around women's leadership and women's roles in the church. And so she's a very prominent theologian. And so we had a panel of four women who talked about, and the name of the panel was, we have a dream. And, it's a little, it's this idea that all these women had interacted, in some important way inside the Catholic Church. And so they had experiences of working at the higher levels, and they had experience in, good experiences and not so good experiences. And so they talked very honestly about what those experiences were like. And then they talked very honestly about what they hoped for the church, this notion of a God that's bigger than, a male image. And, and, you know, many of these things. And so, you know, having, you know, bringing women as deacons into the church, bringing women into true equality in the church. And so there was, you know, many, many things were discussed, and they put some concrete ideas on the table, including the gender policy of the Catholic Church, saying that this is, you know, a model that really could be replicated, not only in the Vatican, but in, you know, all kinds of regions in the church, in other countries, including the United States. I mean, I think there's a kind of notion that somehow we're so much further ahead, and in some ways we have a more difficult time than working with some of the bishops in India. Mm-hmm. And just an example, that day we had a mass prior to a Eucharist before we started, and we had the Archbishop of New Delhi, Bishop Koto, who actually presided at the mass. And at that mass, his homily was on women's equality. In my 60 years of being a Catholic, I never heard anyone preach with such clarity about equality.
Wow.
And then, not only that, he turned it over and let another woman, Carrie Robinson, from the Leadership Roundtable, give her reflections on the and so I think maybe that was a first in the church, you know, to have a woman, you know, also giving the reflections at the homily. Was so they find many ways to, you know, really make women's leadership a reality, and they do it just little by little, and it's kind of the norm for them and not the exception.
Couple of questions. The homilies and the transcript of the panel discussion, mm-hmm. will these be available for us to read?
Everything. You can get this on a Future Church website, but I've created we have a document with the panel discussion and a document with the homily, and I don't have the full homily of the Archbishop, but I did actually do some writing about it and included some of the very important pieces that he said about women's leadership. So
terrific.
On the Future Church website, for sure, you can get copies of all these things.
And that's futurechurch.org.
Correct.
And then the other question I have is whether you think the occurrence of this panel discussion at the Vatican, whether that has Pope Francis's fingerprints on it.
And what do you mean by that?
In terms of, would this have ever happened?
If without him, no. I mean, I think this is one of the ways, the really important ways. Now, you know, everybody knows that Pope Francis hasn't gone as far as we'd like him to go when it comes to women in the church. There are good reasons to point out where he, really is. In many ways, he's really pushed the church forward, but in this way, he has not. But what he has done is created an atmosphere for dialogue, and in that sense, I mean, we couldn't have a better moment. I mean, even if he's not out front, sort of leading the charge on this, he's allowing other people to begin conversations that have been suppressed for decades now. You know, no one is allowed to talk about these things, and so it's suppressed a lot of conversation that people, you know, even if it wasn't directly women's ordination, people just were not talking about these things. It just was a little on the taboo side, unless you were sort of preaching the magisterium's position on it. You weren't allowed to talk about it. And so this is, in my mind, you know, this is a Francis moment, and we're hoping for a long Francis period, even on to the, whoever is comes next. But,
Amen.
You know, this is a Francis moment where we're allowed to talk about things that we haven't actually been able to talk about, and certainly not inside the Vatican.
Right.
These women were not hand-chosen by, somebody from, the Curia. And, you know, these women came from outside of that system, and they spoke with a great deal of honesty and integrity and authenticity, and that's brand new, I think, in the church.
If you're just tuning in,
We are talking with Deb Rose Milovic, Executive Director of Future Church, about how women are making strides toward fuller equality with men in the Catholic Church.
This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS 91.7 FM Storrs.
This is Mark Silk. I direct the Leonard E. Greenberg Center for the Study of Religion and Public Life at Trinity College, and delighted to be able to say a word on behalf of Reasonably Catholic, which I think is a wonderful show for progressive Catholics. I urge a support for the show, and you should go to the website at WESUFM.org as early and often as you can.
You know, knowing nothing, but just having a sense of him from having watched from afar, mm-hmm. It almost feels like, you know, because he's such a smart, deep guy, I feel like it might be strategic on his part to take these baby steps in the mm-hmm. area of women. Because mm-hmm. if he goes too far too fast, he's going to create trouble, you know?
Yeah, I think he's very strategic. I would just say that I think if he had an inclination and an understanding, he would probably push it further along. I think one of the things that we're hoping will be created in this next, you know, year or two is that, like he did with the Commission for the Protection of Children and like he did with the G9, that he'll actually develop a panel of women, you know, and a spectrum of women across the board, you know, philosophically or theologically, if you will, mm-hmm. to advise him on this. You know, he said, we need a new theology. He understands something big is missing
right.
when he says something like, we need a new theology of women. And, you know, and so my question is, how would he actually develop that? Well, if he uses the Indian model, he will bring women in and let them, you know, work and talk with him in order to say, you know, to sort of map it out in partnership with him
right.
and to say, here's something to think about, Pope Francis, and here's how we think you could go forward. And you know, give, you know, we have lots and lots of brilliant women here that could in the church who could really help lead this charge and really open the doors.
Let us help you.
Yeah, no, and I think he's open to that kind of thing. Of course he is. I mean, he's a person who works collaboratively. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
So why not collaborate in this area as well? You know, that's my question. It seems to me almost non-controversial
right.
to develop a commission of women to help advise on these questions of how to create this more incisive female presence, how to you know, bring more women into leadership. Everybody is saying it, the cardinals, the Pope, you know, all the people, even at the high levels, are saying this has to happen.
Right.
So how to do it? Well, bring this council of women together and let them advise you on this theology of women that you know needs to happen. And you know, and you can talk about the differences in language, but for me that question says, I want to know more about, you know, how to support and bring forward women in the church. And I think he's in that learning mode, as he always is, seems to be. You know,
right.
he seems to always be willing to listen and learn and then to develop. So, and I do think he's strategic as well. So I think you're right about that.
This is an interview with Future Church Executive Director Deb Rose Milovic, bringing back dispatches from the front, as it were, as progressive-minded Catholics, male and female, little by little advance the cause of full equality for women in the church.
This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters, and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS 91.7 FM Storrs, UConn's radio for the people.
R-E-S-P-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-C-T.
Well, if we're going to fit in all our good news, we better press on to
sure.
Ireland.
Sure.
What happened there in Ireland?
Yeah, so this is the second meeting, again, gosh, I'm in twos here on these meetings, these international meetings, but this is the second meeting of the heads of priest associations and priests and lay people, or church citizens, as some people like to call them, in the Catholic Church. And this is actually a brand new effort. It's in a sense, I don't know that it's been tried at this level before. You know, priests, and it was actually led by Father Helmut Schuller of Austria. Mm. Father Schuller had been to the United States on this, 15-city tour,
right,
back in 2013.
The tipping point.
The tipping, Catholic tipping point. And so, and after that, he was so enamored with this idea of the rights and responsibilities of Catholics in the Church that he thought this would be a good reason to bring the heads of priest associations and priests and some lay reform representatives to the table to talk about what we might be able to do together. So we had the first meeting in Bregenz, Austria, in November of 2013, and developed a bit of a plan. And actually, at Bregenz, one of the things we talked about was women in church leadership, and we actually talked about this notion of bringing the gender policy to the Vatican. And so, in a sense, that happened since the first meeting. We were able to find a way to bring that to fruition, to bring that conversation to the Vatican. And so this time we expanded the circle. So I think six countries were represented, mostly, West European and United States were there. And this time they expanded it to 10 countries. And so we had people from Australia, Austria, Germany, India, Ireland, Slovakia, Switzerland, United States, the U.K., and, of course, and Ireland. I think I may have missed someone. There were 10. But anyway, and so we had 38 people who came, members, representatives of lay reform organizations and representatives from priest associations. And I don't know if you know the history of priest associations, but Helmut Schuller in 2011 issued the call for disobedience in Austria to really, in a sense, a kind of protest against the shrinking of the church, the closing church doors because of this priest shortage, and then adding on more duties to priests and really many things. Instead of opening ordination to all who are called, including married men and women, they were closing churches. So he issued that call, and they organized, in a sense, like a union, and more voices. It's not as easy to take somebody down when you have sort of a group behind you. And so, and this idea spread. Australia already had an organization going, and in the United States, they developed one. In Ireland, Tony Flannery was the founder or co-founder of the same sort of organization in Ireland. And this really brought priests together in a way that gave them a voice and in a sense, clout that they didn't have before. So when they were speaking together about something, it had a greater impact, with their bishops and so forth, and got them in some trouble, too. But anyway, so this group came together, and in the first time we met, it was very clear that we wanted to stay together as priests and lay people, because in a sense we really want to model that kind of way of being co-equals in the church. Mm-hmm. and so it's been a 2 years of kind of coming together, and in Limerick we had we did a lot of work together about what it means to be in the church, what it means to try to bring reform. We did some work on some real issues like women in the church, how we wanted, this idea of getting a council of women to work with Pope Francis came up. We worked on things, issues around the synod, getting women and families who will be talked about but maybe not represented, like Catholics who are divorced and remarried, or Catholics in LGBT relationships and so forth, how to get them invited. And so we developed a whole strategy around that. There was a lot of talk about what we can do to devolve power away from sort of Rome at the Vatican and into local churches, which is, you know, where church really functions at its best and so forth and is most vibrant. And then we talked about, you know, the Pope's encyclical on the environment and how much more work we need to do around that. So we took up quite a few very important issues, but I think the main event for me was this discussion that we ended up having around the Eucharist. The first year we had a Eucharist and it was on the plan. You know, we would have on the third day we would have a Eucharist. This sounds so biblical on the third day, but anyway. So on the third day a couple of women, including myself, had said to Tony Flannery, who is the founder of the association in Ireland, said, you know, we think that there ought to be a woman co-presiding, and we didn't have anybody ordained outside of the church, but we just felt there was room for a woman to be standing next to a priest. And we said, if we're going to do this work together, it should be celebrated in the Eucharist together. And so he said, okay, well, let's bring it up to the group. And this turned out to be sort of an amazing moment, and I think a sign of our real maturation as a group together, but also just for me it was just one of these moments of the Holy Spirit moving. And so we brought the idea up, and people talked about it, went around the group several times, around this circle several times, and it was a very respectful and hard conversation. Lots and lots of tears. Yeah. Lots and lots of pain, some people were weeping because it was so hard to be a woman in the church. Some people were weeping because it was so hard to be a priest in a church where women's roles and ministry is so suppressed. And some people were weeping because it's so hard to be courageous in this church. And it just turned out to be just an amazing moment of communion between us, because there was a lot of shared pain and a lot of, you know, people who were, shared their fears, shared their worries, shared their pain and suffering. And what we ended up doing was foregoing sort of our traditional Eucharist for a kind of, some people call it an agape service, prayer service. Uh-huh. And we put the wine and the bread up on this sort of makeshift altar that we would have had anyway. Yeah. And we didn't share it, and we left it there as a sign. With all of us had a candle, and we put it on there. But it turned out to be just this beautiful, in my mind, Eucharist. Yeah. of us coming together and sharing, sort of saying, in this church we are still not one, because women's roles and women's ministry have been so suppressed, and it's painful for every single one of us here. And here is our prayer together. And it was just an amazing moment. I tend to think of it as kind of like this Jerusalem Council moment, where, you know, they were trying to decide, you know, the leaders in the communities were trying to decide who's in, who's out, what you can eat, what you can't eat. And, right. And it was like that. It was like, one of these amazing moments that I thought, you know, should bubble out beyond the church. If we could have these kind of conversations everywhere, we'd be in a different place in this church.
Wow.
And for me, that's the real nourishment. You can't legislate it. You can't knock it out of people, and you can't keep people away from it. When there's that much heartfelt willing to be vulnerable in a group, that's communion. And that was the power.
The only better thing would have been if you had a woman go consecrate that bread and wine.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have been better, actually. In some ways, you know, I think the whole model is something that we need to reevaluate and rethink. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are. I mean, there's a lot of people talking about, you know, what the Eucharist means and how to reevaluate. And I'm not so sure about that statement. I think in my own, and this is a little bit of my bias, but when I'm in a small Eucharistic community and we're sharing that, you know, space, mm-hmm. Among us as co-equals, for me, that's the most nourishing Eucharist I can partake in.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of models of Eucharist out there, and I'm not opposing anything, but I'm just saying I don't know that it would, I don't know.
Wouldn't have had added value.
I don't know if there was any better outcome in this particular place, in this particular time. In my mind, it felt like an amazing moment to see into God's heart and to see in our own hearts. And for me, that's the stuff of being church together.
Well, onward.
Yeah, sure.
You're listening to an interview with Future Church Executive Director Deb Rose Milovec on recent good news for Catholic women.
This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS 91.7 FM Storrs.
Hi, I'm Cindy Mokel. I'm a convert who is still exploring what my having joined this Catholic Church is all about. Maria Johnson's show, Reasonably Catholic, is just a ticket. It's lively and challenging for anyone who wants to explore what this movement is all about. And in order to thank WESU for having a program such as Reasonably Catholic, it would be great if you would send a contribution to the station, because WESU runs on a shoestring. Your donation will be very carefully spent, and it will help with all the programming. You can make your contribution at WESUFM.org. Thank you so much.
What was Future Church's role, if any, in the Pope's, what shall we say, calling off the dogs?
Okay, well, Future Church, I could make a big joke here. We've got an inside track to the Pope. No, we are part of, we've been part of a group for a long time called the Nun Justice Coalition, or the Nun Justice Project, which is a group of organizations that, you know, in 2009, but especially in 2012 when the CDF came down hard on LCWR, really worked to organize people all over the United States, and even the world, I think, got very involved in this.
Just for listeners who haven't been paying attention, the LCWR is
the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, were formally reprimanded, and in 2012... By the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, and prior to that, in 2009, there was the start of an apostolic visitation in the United States of all women religious, and
which
it was
is basically
a,
an inquisition.
It was a bit of a witch hunt. That the apostolic visitation actually came out of the Congregation for Religious, and then the reprimand for the Leadership Conference of Women Religious came out of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith. So, in a sense, two sort of dicasteries were after them, the nuns in one way or another. And you know, there was a lot of suspicion about what the nuns were doing in the United States. You know, they were feminists and not in, you know, that's not a term of endearment when it comes from the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, they were at odds with their bishops. I mean, a lot of things happened around, a lot of this happened because during the whole debacle, if you will, and the whole healthcare debate, when the bishops were against what was going on with the administration, the nuns were saying, we need this. You know, poor people need healthcare. And so they were, in a sense, at odds with their bishops, and it's you know, more than likely that this is what actually sparked all this controversy and sparked the kind of, investigations, if you will, that came down from Rome. And so, and the Future Church was part of the Nun Justice Coalition, which helped organize ordinary Catholics. Although I have to tell you, I mean, it's always good to have a group of people sort of helping organize. But this incident, especially in 2012, brought Catholics out in a way that they had never come out before.
Right.
I mean, people who were dissatisfied with the church were so angry because the church was coming after the nuns, the real leaders in the church, as many Catholics felt.
Yeah.
Those who were really promoting the gospel, those who were really doing the work with the poor, those who were building our hospitals, building our healthcare systems, building our educational systems. These women had been pioneers of Catholicism in the church. They're smart, savvy, know what they're doing. And the Rome had the nerve to come after them and say, well, they care too much about working with the poor and they're not following along with the bishops enough. And you know, quite honestly, many Catholics don't agree with the bishops on many of these things. And so the LCWR are you know, in a sense, kind of the heroines of Catholicism, the real leaders, if you will. Everything they do, they work so collaboratively and they solved problems together, and they were, you know, they were making Vatican II real within their communities and in the church at large. And so this brought people out in droves. I mean, people everywhere. There were like, I can't remember the number. It was 60,000-70,000 signatures in the United States alone, you know, supporting the nuns. It was just, people were so frustrated. This really, really cracked things open in a way. The Vatican had gone too far is what it amounted to. And it was a push against not just women religious, but in a sense against women in the church in general. And so this is how women who were practicing leadership were being treated. And so it became a, you know, a real rallying cry for Catholics to say, you know, get off their backs. And so I don't know if you remember, not too long ago, Cardinal Sean O'Malley said this was a disaster, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there are many in the church who thought, oh, you know, this is crazy for the Vatican to pick a fight like this. But in a sense, it was sort of a natural, end to the sense, their misuse of power and their distrust. And so,
and we should say, for the record, for people who don't have the timeline down, that it all began under a previous pope, not our own.
Right,
Francis.
It did. It began under Benedict, and of course, you know, that we had been under those years of, under John Paul II, you know, kind of the silencing of, you know, voices that.
Right.
Weren't in agreement, those dissenting voices, that faithful dissent, there was a lot of silencing. And then, of course, Benedict, who was the architect of many of the things that John Paul II did, these things came down under him. You're right. And so this pope, I think, was looking for a way out. And he also put new people in place, in some of these dicasteries. Well, Mueller stayed. So the LCWR had friends inside, people who felt this was just a disaster and an injustice too, I would say. I think Pope Francis was looking for a way to end it, and so it did. I mean, it they actually pulled the plug on this early.
It was rather abrupt.
Yeah, very abrupt. And some of the things that happened, which are kind of interesting, is that the LCWR and CDF kind of entered into a joint agreement, which is, it doesn't happen with the CDF. They just sort of say what's going to happen, and they only put their signature on it. So it's interesting that it was a joint document. It's also interesting that the LCWR met for the first time with a pope, the leaders, after this, during this, for 50 minutes with Pope Francis.
Yeah.
He doesn't meet with people, for that length of time that he's getting ready to kick right back out the door. So, there was a lot of signals that he gave, in a sense, that said, these people are all right by me.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I think we have to watch is how it actually plays out, because there's still oversight language within that document. And so I think the thing to watch, my hope is and belief is, because I think Leadership Conference of Women Leadership Conference of Women Religious have exercised autonomy in a very important way, and they've come to the table, with that sense that we're going to live out our gospel calling, and we'll talk with you, and we'll continue to be in dialogue with you, but we're going to live out our gospel calling. And I think it will be interesting to watch how it goes forward. Will they have speakers at the event that aren't as sort of edgy, or sort of bringing new ideas? Will that change? Will anything change? I think that will be the real test. But the question But my hope is that they'll just continue on, because I don't think the CDF could actually reinstate this fight again. I think they have been, the plug has been pulled, and for them to go back even after them again would be just another disaster.
No,
and
that's over.
So I think they've had their knees cut out from under them, and in this sense, I think we see, you know, lots of people were saying who won and who lost, but, you know, it'll be interesting to watch it go forward, but my sense is this is over with, and the LCWR will basically operate as they always have, doing the work that they need to do, calling into question the things they need to call into question, bringing in new ideas, and always doing it with as faithful people in the church. So the LCWR met with the Pope for 50 minutes, which is in itself a very big sign that the Pope's saying, you know, I've got your back.
You know, it's such a seismic thing, I think, that I just can't resist asking you where you were when you heard about it.
Yeah, well, you know where I was. I was in Limerick, and we were just getting ready for the press conference on the final day, and I was sitting at the panel as part of the press conference, and Tony Flannery walked in and said, "Oh, well, it looks like the LCWR debacle is over, and we're waiting for reporters to pull in, and we're on the computer looking to see what has happened, you know." So, yeah, I was in Limerick. I remember it well. I would remember a moment like that.
You know.
So, yeah.
Was there a celebration?
What we had to do first was, because the document, there were parts of the document that are kind of troubling yet. I mean, you know, there's some language about oversight and so forth. And so we actually, look through it, and then, of course, the Nun Justice Project folks got together and really talked in that. And some of our people on that, in that project have sort of backwater channels, you know, so they talk to people who know. And so we had to sort of sort out with, what had really happened, to what extent was it, a victory for women religious and women in the church and for the LCWR. And, and so we came out with our own statement saying, yippee, we're glad it's over, and felt that so, of course we're celebrating. I mean, I think everybody is very, very thrilled that it's finally over with. And I think the LCWR is very glad it's finally over and they can just move on now and get about their work without having this hanging over their heads.
But we're still watching this space in a sense.
Yeah, no, I think we'd be foolish to not watch the space.
Right.
I think we have to always do that. Yeah. And so, but if history is the predictor of the future, LCWR is going to go on and do the work as they've always done it.
Right.
So,
we have a few minutes left. Maybe you can try to braid all of these three parts together. What do you make of it all? Should we be hopeful?
Yeah. I think this is a hopeful time. I really think that, I mean, as much as we like to talk about the church being a local church, and it is, and the people of God are the church, and they are, it does matter what happens at the top. It does matter in a church that's structured in the way ours is structured. And so one person, one man in this case, can have an awful lot of influence in our church. And he can use that to shut people down and to tighten up, the rules and make sure that everybody is doing, walking in lockstep to the extent he can do that, or he can open things up and make it a mess. And I think that's what Francis is doing.
Well, he's as much as said that. He said he wants a big, messy church.
Yeah, he does. I mean, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's letting people be what people are really good at, which is coming together with all their diversity and all their love for the church and all the many ways that faith plays out in people's lives and, you know, with the things they trust and they distrust, and he's letting us talk. And for me, what happened in Rome with the Voices of Faith event, what happened in Limerick with the Priests and People event, and then what happened with the LCWR, these are all moments where this openness to the people of God is having a very positive impact, and in that way, this is a new era, and I want to do everything we can to take advantage of it, and then to help it to move forward into the future of the church as well. Because if this continues, I think we'll see a healed, a more healed and more whole, holistic church, and where people are feel more welcome and included and are able to shape the way the church works in a brand new way. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else is going to happen in this era, and encourage and work with people as we always have done. You know, the people of God, the people in the church have been doing this work forever and ever and ever. And LCWR, people like them have been leading the church, and so have many, many lay Catholics. And so, but to see some movement is a great joy for all of us, I think. And while we're always cautious, and we're never, in a sense, going to be, and there'll be no end. Justice will never be perfect, so we're going to continue to work on it. But in the end, it's really quite a joyful thing to see movements and to feel the Holy Spirit work in a way that maybe people felt in the 60s and 70s after Vatican II. There was just like this, this rush of the Holy Spirit, blowing over people, and people were creating and innovating and inventing. And I think there's some of that back again, and it just makes the church alive again.
You know, somebody said I should do an episode about how you don't have to be embarrassed to be Catholic anymore.
That's true. I mean, well, let's not go too far. I think there's still plenty of things we can say the church. I mean, the church needs to become a place of justice for women. Let's face it. I'm a mother and a grandmother. Good gravy. I want this church to, I've worked for women's rights my whole life, and I want to see those rights and that equality manifest inside the church. I'm not satisfied. I'm not going to pretend I am. Of course I'm not. And so when I see these moments, I become super uber energized, if you will. It's time to work. It's time to get some things done. It's time to move things forward. Let's ask for things. Let's take risks in ways that we hadn't before.
Deb, it's a sunny day as we're recording this, and I don't know what the weather will be like when it finally airs in a few weeks, but I just always come away so happy after I talk to you. It's like I forget all my Debbie Downerness.
Yeah,
I'm maybe it's going to be okay.
Well, it is going to be okay. I mean, I think in some way, shape, or form, I think that God is going to find a way. It might not look the way we expect it will, but it's this is part of who we are as a people and as human beings, and so it is going to be okay. So that I know, and I'm rooting for a church that I think could be better, and it's part of this church that I love. So we're going to work in it and push every button we can to see if we can help bring justice and change along.
Well, on behalf of women Catholics everywhere, thank you.
Yeah, well, the thanks goes out to all the, hundreds of thousands of people who are doing this work every single day. We're just one tiny little speck in that. And
Future Church?
Yeah, Future Church, we're just part of if you think of a beehive, all the worker bees out there doing, going all sorts of directions. I mean, we're just part of that. This happens because Catholics care. Catholics are working for these things. They've been working for them for forever. The Spirit of God lives in the people of God, and we're just working with that and doing our little bit of it. So
I love that worker bees.
Yeah.
May it yield beautiful, sweet honey.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Thank you, Deb.
Thanks, Maria.
That was an interview with Deb Rose Milovec, Executive Director of Future Church, about progress that's being made toward women's fuller equality with men in the Catholic Church. And that's all for this episode of Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith. Be sure to tune in next time when we'll discuss the Catholic approach to the environment with Franciscan Father Sam Fuller. Don't forget to check out the Reasonably Catholic. And now stay tuned for the Jive at 5, WESU's community calendar, and then for Wild Wild Live, a sneak peek into the live music scene at Wesleyan. And please, don't forget to throw a few dollars the station's way. It's such a good cause and the right thing to do. Thanks. I'm Maria Johnson.